Well, guys, this episode is pretty spicy. I'm just going to leave it at that. You'll have to watch to find out, but it might get the algorithm a little angry at us. So before we start this episode, please take this opportunity to go over to Rumble and follow our channel over there. We don't post a lot to it, but we might have to in the future, depending on what happens after this episode. So enjoy it. Buckle up. We'll see you on Rumble.
Hi there, Groypers. We are really appreciative of you watching our last video, and thanks for tuning in. And we appreciate your comments, and we're going to be diving into those comments and responding, as well as talking about one of your favorite topics, a Jewish pedo.
Absolute red meat for you guys. Here we go. On a silver platter.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
Welcome back to the Human Reaction Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Joe Sheehan. You probably haven't seen me in a while. Of course, you know David Rand. And back by special request, or I don't know, some act of God, we've got Bennett in the studio with us at the table.
Surprise, motherfucker.
I think safe to say this one's going to be pretty spicy. We're looking forward to getting into it. Before we do, please like, comment, as you very much did on the last episode. Please keep that up. We want to have a conversation with you guys. We want to explore these topics in depth and with as much honesty and integrity as we possibly can, and fairness. Hopefully that came through in the last episode. I thought you guys did a great job listening through it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Yeah, it was... it's been interesting diving into what he said, what he's done, and I got more to learn, of course, and as I'm discovering, reading the reviews. So let's dive into the comments.
Let's do it. All right. What do we got for our first one?
All right. So first up, obviously this one just was interesting to me. K2MPT. As a 42-year-old, pretty much a libertarian voter before the last election, I remember telling my dad, a huge Christian Zionist, that the only reason I have reservations about voting for Trump was a seemingly surrounding himself with a lot of Israel sympathizers. When the majority of alternative media voices were coming out against Israel, I was. And then it just dies there. I don't know what that's about. No way. But I think that's a common sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Why is there no read more on this one?
That's really weird. That's kind of bothering me. Yeah. maybe he meant as I was.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways, I did think that was interesting, right? Because it's like this, it kind of captures the moment a little bit of the libertarian and the mainstream kind of colliding a little bit within the Republican circle. And I think that's part of the reason why Nick Fuentes is having his breakout moment, his generational run, that kind of rhetoric. In part because a lot of these issues are coming to the mainstream, and they get to be the groypers, get to be the I told you so's, you know, maybe in this.
Satisfying feeling.
Or like they're the first movers. What are they're the, so in the music industry where you're like, I was in that band first.
They're the hipsters they're the of truth
yeah, right now. Yeah. at least Israel criticism.
Sure.
Of course, they take it much further into identitarianism and criticism of Jewishness. Mm-hmm. But I think that is not as non-mainstream as it was before. I mean, Candace Owens is kind of mainstreaming it in many ways.
Yeah.
Not writ large anti-Jewishness, but writ large in a particular strain of Jewishness that she connects to the Frankists. And Fuentes rejects that. And he doesn't think it's a Frankish thing. He thinks it's an all Jewish thing. But I do think it's an interesting, and this captures the moment. That's why we're talking about it. I mean, it's not that I'm particularly all of a sudden super interested in identitarianism. But I think he's having impact, and this is an important issue for the right to contend with.
For sure. For sure.
So next up, I thought this was one of the early ones that was probably best written.
Does Kyle know this person?
I don't think so. Why?
Club Penguin Fan 106.
Oh! He might be a fellow penguin.
For those that don't know, our friend Kyle is a pudgy penguin.
Yes.
Enthusiast, investor.
All of the above.
All of the above.
Fetish? Okay, so... Yeah,
there might be a component of that, actually.
But the indication's a dog. And I... So, you know, if it was a penguin, I believe you. But
yeah, that's fair.
Know.
That's fair.
Do you want to read this one, Joe?
Sure. As a gripper watching this, I was bittersweet. I'm glad you guys dug into the lore of America First and were fair to Nick for the most part. Unfortunately, because of all the lies and smears against Nick over the years, it's hard for normal people to get the full picture. I think that Nick is a generational talent and nothing will stop his message. So I'm not here to argue with some of your points against Nick. You will get what Nick is doing eventually. It took me around a year of watching Nick's show nearly every day to understand what Nick's game is. Nick is more than a political commentator. Tucker and J.D. Vance aren't as they seem. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. So our takeaway at the end of the day, and I appreciate the overall message. I mean, that's like the kind of good faith comment that you really want when you're for criticizing sure. another guy who has a larger audience than you. So thank you for that, guys. Very generous of you. We did get some ones that were less generous. We'll get into those.
in some part, I'm actually glad I wasn't there for this one.
F*** yourself.
Because you guys took all the heat. But I mean, scanning through, I think there was a large majority of ones that were generous and like, you know, appreciated the thoughtful approach. So
mm-hmm. yeah. And so and I think this moment, and particularly the way that he's framing this, is that this is, I mean, he's super talented. I agree with that. I do think he's talented. I think he's very smart. And then there's this whole Tucker and JD Vance, aren't they seem? This is an interesting moment too. We touched on it, but we didn't really unpack it too much. So Nick Fuentes is really coming against the tech right side of things. And I do think that this is going to be part of the major dynamic going into the next election cycle. Who in the midterms and then in 2028, who is on the tech right and how much of the skepticism and connections to things like Palantir and the folks who came up around that were largely celebrated in their election cycle are now deemed as, you know, internal opposition.
Right. I want to pose a question back to the comment section here. To this part here, you'll get what Nick is doing here eventually. You know, you can't understand all of it. Like, what aren't we understanding? What wouldn't a normal person understand given the, you know, the narratives that have been perpetuated around him? Like, let us know. As someone who doesn't really know a lot or hardly anything really about Nick Fuentes, I'm curious to know what those deeper layers are. What should we explore?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. And if you got links, please, you know, I mean, you can come onto the Discord and drop them. I'd love to check them out. I you know, have watched some of his shows, but he's got a big catalog, guys. Like, it's thousands and thousands of hours. So I don't. It's harder to capture the longer term arc and the evolution of him. So many of the comments are saying, "Hey, he's changed a lot," and I can appreciate that. I mean, he's a young guy developing his career, and I understand that. This is a pretty common one. So Nick has been right more than he's been wrong. I disliked him for a long time, but despite his off-putting personality, the truth is hard to suppress forever.
So he's the new Alex Jones?
I think that's actually not a bad formulation of it. You know, Alex Shane Jones kind of mainstreamed a bit. You know,
I mean, definitely.
1776 will commence again.
He's definitely
he just wanted to play.
Yeah. But I mean, it's. A fair
I think it comparison. Is I think it's a fair comparison.
I mean, there was a time where Alex Jones being on anything mainstream was like, whoa, holy shit, you know, and maybe that's because I'm old, but not it wasn't too long ago, it seems like to me, that he was, you could only really find him on Infowars.com right. and nowhere else.
Well, yeah, I mean, to talk about being universally canceled, there's a bit of a parallel there as well. I mean, mm-hmm. Alex Jones was one of the first, I think, voices in that space that he occupies to be completely wiped from the internet, and obviously the whole court case he went through, we detailed that mm-hmm. many episodes ago. But yeah, fair comparison, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So Helga Lampe
must be German.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Recommendation Warren Smith and Nick Fuentes talks. Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. Defend free wrong love and hate speech. As long as no one is promoting violence, no one deserves to be doxed. Banned, or, and it does that weird dot 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 again.
Interesting.
What the hell, YouTube?
Come on. I think YouTube is trying to censor these comments.
I mean, there are Roper comments, so.
I mean, that'd be par for the course, wouldn't it?
That's gay, YouTube. Don't do that.
That's super gay.
Don't be gay.
Yeah.
Okay, this is an interesting one. I'm tired of the there's no denying his talent and intelligence cope. The reason you think he's talented and smart is because he is correct. So so desperate to distance yourselves from the greatest voice in the conservative movement.
So is that that's directed at you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because I was complimentary him. Apparently, that's a problem. Well, there was a point where when we were discussing the frankest bit of that, Kyle was taken aback because he didn't know that. And he and I, you know, I was like, no. It's this is where he's at on it. And Kyle's like, I don't think he knows what he's talking about here. Because, you know, and Kyle is, when talking about the occult and about niche religion stuff, Kyle's no pushover. He knows a lot there. Mm-hmm. That's one of his areas of interest that he does, that he is no joke about. So I, he has maybe a disagreement with Nick on that. Or not, but he did in that dialogue kind of say, well, I don't know if Nick is as educated on this as he's making himself out to be. So interesting comment there. But I was legitimately trying to be fair and say, you know, that he is not only talented, but very intelligent and knows this stuff. He did also at another point, you know, kind of claim that Dave Smith was only giving like an intro 101, the clean break memo and Middle Eastern geopolitics. You know, and there, and that's just, you know, his perspective. I sure. mean, to me, it can be, especially if you're acting in bad faith, not be able to distinguish between trying to sell something to an uneducated audience mm-hmm. and appearing to look like you don't actually know the issue very well because you're right. not getting all the texture that a more educated person might be able to do.
Right.
If you're talking to your own audience for a long period of time, you can really build in a lot of texture and a
right.
lot of detail.
Right.
But when you're on the Joe Rogan experience and you're talking to 30 million people, you know, for, who's never heard of this idea in the first place, you got to really distill that down to the lowest resolution picture
right.
so you're not losing them.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's important too, because the ones that do grasp it and do find it interesting may dig for those deeper layers of
yeah.
context.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
I've got one here. It's not on the screen, but this is a spicy one, so I want to call it out.
Okay.
You guys are clearly bad faith actors.
Oof.
Trying to cover for Tucker, who was clearly caught in a massive lie.
Okay, so my defense of Tucker was meant to be a steel man. I'm trying to say, and this gets confused easy on podcast.
Sure.
I'm trying to say, in the best light, this is the most charitable interpretation of what we're observing here. It doesn't mean that that's what I think. That I know that's what happened. I'm just saying this is the steel man. If you're trying to be honest with your audience, that's actually what you do rather than just telling them only what you think.
That's fair.
Right? Yeah. So like in the degree to which we're covering for them is also the degree to which that was I'm also telling you my experience. My experience was, well, I mean, didn't we know that his dad was a CIA, you know, asset?
I thought that he had admitted that in the past. Like that's what I had understood. And then apparently he said he didn't know about that until after Nick Fuentes said that he was.
Yeah.
I saw some of the, I don't remember if it was clips you guys played, but I did see a video of like Tucker through the years, like referencing that. So
that his dad was a CIA agent.
Yeah. Or so I didn't really think much of it at the time of listening to the Candace Tucker interview, but I think just on the surface, it does appear like, you know, Tucker's caught in a lie or whatever. So like, mm-hmm. I kind of understand their point.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think I need a little bit. I'd like to hear if Tucker tries to clarify that in any way.
I'd be very curious as well. Especially, I mean, it could just be right up. He just lied. It could be also that there's a difference between an asset, like a collaborator and an agent. Mm-hmm. And it could be, and my steel man was it, it could be that he later on revealed, like Bennett, to be an actual agent of the Central Intelligence Agency.
There might be some context missing there for new people. We've often called Bennett our CIA asset.
Yeah, he's here to watch us, make sure we're...
He hasn't been doing a very good job lately. He's been very remote.
I've been gone for...
You've kind of been phoning it in. Do we need to get you like one of those screen recorder things so that we know that like your mouse is moving when you're supposed to be editing? Sure.
He's like, I don't need to have Media Matters do it. I'm editing the podcast.
Yeah, these are our tax dollars at work. I want to make sure you're actually doing the job in it.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. And so what I think, as I said, is like, hey, I'm not that big of a Nick Fuentes fan or, you know, followed him a lot, but, and this is a reply to that, friendly reminder, there are people further to the right than you, and some of us would like to have our arguments listened to and addressed. Claiming you don't listen to the right because you already know what the right thinks because you know what you think doesn't leave room for discussions to your right. I hope that makes sense. Thank you for tackling this topic. Dude, you're totally fair. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, and I was trying to think, I was doing some self-reflection. I was like, is part of it for me... is there are two wolves One of them's gay. No, I'm just kidding.
And the other one's retarded.
There's
I'm
a part
of retarded.
There's the philosophy nerd in me who's really interested in theory and really interested in ideas and wants to I'd spend all my time just thinking of niche ideas all the time if I could. And then there's the career me that has been much more in the politics of the practical. And so my feed is typically more of the politics of the practical because that's where I spent more time since graduating college and really getting professional about politics and doing what I do. But, you know, this whole thing of like talking about Nick Fuentes is my attempt, honestly, to look at this and be straight up with it and engage with it and say what I think is right and what I think is wrong about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is a perfect segue into this next comment that I found that I want to address, not on screen here. Quote, and this is quoting, I think Kyle maybe, and Kyle's not here to defend himself, but perhaps you can. Quote, I have a lot of disagreements. The commenter says, you sound beta.
Yeah.
So why is that a beta take to a disagreement?
It's so funny because how do you come across as charitable while also coming across as alpha?
One more time.
Betas!
So to be clear, if you want to challenge my manliness, if you want to just really like go after it, I invite anyone to come down to my gym and we can roll. You want to let me know just how tough you are? Come on down.
All right.
That's not an opportunity to fight. I mean, really, I just the sport of jiu-jitsu. I'd be happy to do that with you. And even if you're better than me, and we could, you know, you could see if I'm manly or not. Or we can go hunting together. We go do that.
Awesome. That'd be great.
I'd be happy to do that.
For sure. Yeah. Open invitation to...
You're not going to, like, chainy them or anything.
I mean, hopefully not, right? I don't think you have the get-out-of-jail-free card that Dick Cheney had in that instance.
No, I do not. No, I can't see my friend in the face with a shotgun.
Oh, man. All right. What else we got up
here? You shouldn't have been standing there.
Yeah.
I've missed the stream deck. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, we've missed you, Bennett. I'll be honest. Because I can't do it. I'm bad at it.
Oh, we're so bad at multitasking again. Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible.
You were missed greatly, buddy. All right. So our first biggest commentator, Nog Go Go 6932. Hey,
nice.
Yeah, right. What does that even mean? What does that mean? Why are you nicing it?
69.
Oh,
clearly
fair. Okay, you got it. The riff on the Con Inc. quote individualism end quote toward the end was especially poor. Anglo individualism secularism was formulated in a very uniform ethnic environment where the religious spectrum was Catholic to the Protestant denominations. To claim it was meant or tested further is disingenuous and requires erasing history, such as the pushback against opening the U.S. to world migration that went on from the 1920s and the 1960s. The consensus was overturned only when the new elite took over and on false promises at that.
Tell us more, David.
Okay, so what he's talking about is there's a section in the podcast where I am, you know, making the case of like, hey, this is why tolerance is a Western value. Like it has a particular end. So if you're a Western chauvinist, if you're saying that what makes us unique is our connection to our normative culture that goes back thousands of years, that's uniquely Northern European, and that is critical in American society and should be held up as the part of the American ideal, I actually agree with you, right? I agree with that. Now, I'm a little bit more philosophical than like a cultural critic in that sense, that I think it's really the principles that matter, less so the color of the skin of the person who said them. But, you know, that's what's important to me too, as, you know, from my philosophical orientation. So this idea that was formulated in a very uniform ethnic environment, that's true in a sense and not true in a sense. So actually think about it in terms of, especially when it comes to religious tolerance, it really came out of the Hundred Years' War over a big fight over religion. And then also revolutions in England, fights with Scotland, and across the Netherlands when it came to disagreements that really arose into basically just a mutual agreement, just like, we're just not going to fight about religion anymore. Now, that, through the Enlightenment, spread into a much wider range of ideas, but that's really the kernel of it. The seed of that was a punishing ethnic strife. And when I mean ethnic, what I mean is the combination of language and culture and religion and worldview, outlook, all those kind of things all compressed into one word called ethnic. But the religious part of that was huge at that time, like far bigger than we would do that, right? Because you're Catholic in Spain and you're Catholic in England would have a lot in common, even if they spoke a different language and probably would be resistant to fighting one another. While in other eras, that might not have been true. Even, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Especially like today, where a Spanish-speaking person, an English-speaking person, you know, one is Catholic. The Catholic actually is a little bit more diminished under the language barrier.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, especially the folks speak Latin, right? in the elder ages. So, what I would say is to that commentator is I think you're really devaluing the origins of this normative value and kind of thinking about it only in terms of a pretty keyhole type vision when the wellspring that birthed this into the Enlightenment and then into our modern institutions in America, you know, it was, you know, quite contentious around these issues. And then despite that, still embraced tolerance and said, hey, we're just not going to fight about that anymore. And so this gets to the, and then in America, it was especially true from the very beginning, right? For example, you'll hear people say, well, America was 80% white at the time of the founding, and therefore they are, you know, this is the embodiment of, you know, what America should be. We should be like mostly a white country because of that. That's probably too simple, but I'm trying to be quick with it. But even in that time, you can find writings of Benjamin Franklin like, these fucking Germans, dude. You don't even know. Like, they're doing all kinds of shit. We can't have Germans writing in German newspapers. Nice. So as an Irishman and a German, you weren't welcome, right? There was real ethnic strife, but yet we still maintain that coherence of what it meant to be American. Is that possible in today's world? Their case is from the 1920s and 1960s with open immigration. Ish. I mean, before the Becerra program, but then after the 1920s, a lot of that era changed fundamentally. And I would argue, too, that the revolution of the managerial class that changed around the time of the Progressive Era did play a major role in how we think about ourselves and how we reinforce these normative values.
So
internationalism as like the role of America is to, you know, is to manage the world, right? Mm-hmm. And that rather than being a country like other countries. I think this is a recursive, a boomerang of the empire in many ways. Mm. We became an empire, so we began to identify as empires do, which is reducing normative, like, internal outgroup values and becoming more like, well, it's kind of whatever. Your values can be whatever rather than insisting on values. Now, can you insist on values without insist on ethnicity, right? And I think that's actually probably the biggest difference between me and the identitarians is I think ethnicity and values do work together, right? Mm-hmm. They're very important in individual identities, but in aggregate, ethnicities evolve according to from the outside pressure of values.
Sure.
Right? So Catholics who came to the United States eventually integrated into the American system, right? At one point, that was an open question whether or not they would. Other people groups probably will too, as long as we have strong values and identities, right? That say, no, this is what American is. America is putting the shopping cart back, motherfucker. That's what America is. Does that make sense? And failing to do so should be met with shame, you know? And that's one of the things that pisses me off, you know, the most, right? Is stuff like that. It's standing in line. It's being polite. It's opening the door for another person. Mm-hmm. Beyond things like, you know, individualism, you know, blind rule of law, you know, unbiased justice system rule, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Higher ideals, lower ideals.
Yeah. Is there a risk to losing that values identity in a nation when simultaneously maybe your cultural values are being eroded or at least not being held as closely by the native population while also accepting people from other nations that have really strong culture and values? I mean, you're seeing, for example, states across the Midwest and, you know, even into the Northeast that are starting to really embrace like Sharia law. And they've got a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, they've got a very cohesive, seemingly like a strategy there to like really take over some of these smaller towns that historically weren't that way. And they're turning them that way. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a risk inherent there?
Definitely. I mean, so ghettoizing, right, is like having an ethnic group that all comes together in one area and kind of rules self autonomously is common for new immigrant groups. That's just true. You can look at lots of people groups have done that, but between the Irish and the Jews and the Germans and the Polish and, you know, all that has happened in the past.
Yeah.
What's happened in the, but if you orientate to your larger culture with resentment, that is much likely to lead to the larger, worse outcomes of that phenomena, right? And the best example of that is the Native American population and the experience there. And I talked a little bit about that and some of the experience in Montana about that. The if it's orientated to, you know, we're going to be a part of the society that we're in, what tends to happen is that ghettoization filters itself out over time. So it depends on the individual actors within that ethnic group and whether or not they incorporate or not. And then it depends on the larger culture. And I think the criticism of, hey, we've lost an American identity. And it's just this video, and it's so toxic in the brain. Have you guys seen that video? It's like this purple haired dude, and he's at like a protest, and says, someone says, "What about white culture?" And he's like, "White people don't have a culture."
Yep.
That is so irritating to me. It is so frustrating to me because it demonstrates the complete failure of our school system, of our American public discourse. And yeah, to the degree to which I want to be one of the people saying, no, our culture, as the Northern European culture that we inherited, that created English common law and the institutions and values that made America in the first place, the best things about America and some of the worst things, but all the best things, those are really important to conserve. Right? That's the best meaning of what it means to be a conservative. Right? That's like that conservatarian, libertarian, is you're looking to the principle, not just like the low resolution picture of the story. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what is the principle we derive from the American story and these institutions? Right. And so what I look to the principle of that, what I see is, well, no, we have to be very overt about these. We have to teach these, and we have to talk about these. We have to put them into stories that people consume. Otherwise we lose it. It goes away forever. And once it's gone, it's hard to bring back. I agree with that, you know, but the orientation I have to that is, therefore go make shit. Right. Therefore, reform the school system. Therefore, get involved in politics. Therefore, better your life and learn how to be able to articulate these principles to the best of your ability and go out and start talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
What else we got here?
These are the types of guys to say, "I'd never let the government force jab me and then do it because of the pressure and put on a mask begrudgingly."
I didn't. So, respectfully, no.
Yeah, I didn't take the jab. Actually, this was a good one. So, I would say, you guys bring up great and fair points.
Hold on. Who's the comment from?
Oh, yeah.
We got Sam Rhodes, 3510.
I would say, though, you guys bring up great and fair points. I would say, though, that when you're speaking to a camera with no one else in the room, this is where the hyperbole shines, because there's no one else in the room to show decorum. He is genuinely expressing his thoughts consistently. When others in the room, you can see the decorum and respect with a great understanding of social cues. When there's no ill will, he seems to be very respectful, but will still be honest. Would you guys consider having him on and asking him his beliefs and maybe finding out from the source?
I would definitely have Nick Fuentes on the show, despite what it might do to our YouTube channel. We're also on Rumble, by the way.
I was going to say, there's, in reality, only we benefit from having him on.
Yeah.
So, like, we're not naive to that.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's also why we didn't, like, send an invite before we did the video. We're tiny.
If anybody out there watching this has a contact with Nick Fuentes, his team, whatever, yeah, absolutely, open invitation, come on the show.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also, I think the whole point about, like, how he comes off in some of these clips that we were assessing, and we were kind of speculating about the hyperbole and the difference between his show and his interview appearances, I think that's that. This is a much better formulation than some of the things we said. So, well done. I didn't want to go on that one. That one's stupid. All right. Yeah, let's do it.
You want me to read this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. From Jafiri. "I have one compliment and two criticisms. One, you guys did a very good job attempting to treat him fairly with the amount you understand and the context you have. So well done on that. You rarely see fair videos about Nick that aren't just from a griper or a supporter. Here are the criticisms. One, dude with the beard." That's that would Kyle. Be Kyle.
Sorry. I have a beard? What the fuck?
I wouldn't necessarily. That's stubble. That's stubble.
Oh, God. Okay. All right.
Sometimes you have a beard, though. "Dude with the beard mentioned seeing Nick do 180s on people but gave no concrete examples. I have not seen that type of thing and don't consider the recent Candace drama as an example."
I don't mean just like a little bit.
Sorry. I was checking to see your facial hair. So
we'll cut that out.
Yeah.
All right. Number two, "The understanding and analysis of the Joe Kent issue was not good." Emphasis on not good. "You have to understand it from Nick's perspective. He and the Groypers were very strongly supporting Joe Kent originally, and the Super PAC was actually created to raise funds and support for Joe Kent. Nick, understanding his general radioactivity, agreed to not publicize or discuss their support publicly. He only had one condition, which was not to talk shit or, quote, disavow him if he was asked. He gave his word that he would not, and then he broke that word after all of the support that Nick and the Groypers had provided for him. So Nick felt it very bad faith. He didn't like the betrayal, and he wanted to create a consequence and make an example of him. He accepted their support and their money and then betrayed him and publicly disavowed. Nick did what was necessary, and I believe Kent earned that through his own bad moral judgment.
Hmm. So I think this this distance is a theory of victory discussion, right? A debate.
What is that?
So theory of victory is, how do you take your principles and put them into politics, shaping the idea space so that you can advance real policies, get real people elected who actually change things in government. So I tend to be, in elections, a marginalist, philosophically a radical, and a politically in policy wise, take what you can, you know.
Okay, so what do you mean by marginalist?
Yeah, so you get the next best marginal candidate you can.
Okay, so any improvement over what was in the past is good.
According to a value matrix that is rank ordinal, right? So you say, here's my highest values and here's where it's at. So the question was, is like this strategic question that I was criticizing, which was, just real quick background. So Joe Kent's running for Congress, and this whole drama happens that this user describes, where it's revealed that he was connected to Fuentes in the primary process by the guy's opponent. He then disavows, says, hey, I'm not working for this guy or with this guy, and I disagree with some of his views. And then the Groypers then run out against him, including starting a website, I believe, that's confirmed, and a super PAC, which this guy's claiming is confirmed.
Okay, so essentially, just so I'm clear, you're saying that was a strategic misstep because Joe Kent, was it Joe Kent?
Yeah.
Is a marginal improvement over the alternative candidate.
Especially on what I understand to be the Groyper number one priority, which would be foreign policy, where this guy's view of Israel was relatively more restrained than the opposition and was a major opponent of the GWAT.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that to me is non-trivial, right, from their point of view. But that said, and especially with the initial agreement, I understand what they're saying is like he felt betrayed on that sort of thing. And maybe this comes from being a hardened political operative such as I am,
jaded,
been
perhaps,
doing this for a while, is that the kind of, hey, man, that's not me sort of thing is a very common kayfabe in the world of politics. And so you look the other way, and that's how you get marginal improvement. And that is a black pill for some people to hear. But that is actually how things work.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So kind of letting the ego attachment there kind of go in interest of actually getting a win on the political battlefield, it would be maybe what they should have done in that instance.
If they want what they say they want, you know, I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, if you really want to be pure, and this is, you know, as far as for Nick himself will claim, his job is not to be mainstream. His job is not to, to work within the Overton window. His job is to be outside and a radical to push it that way. Awesome. That's your shtick. Go have at it. But once you get into the world of politics, that's Overton window shit. And that's done on the margin. That's done when you're the radical, you can't, you are so far from the average voter that person who's trying to appeal to the average voter has to disavow you. So, you know,
yeah.
And that doesn't say that's a good thing for that person to do. I'm not endorsing it either, right? Mm-hmm. He could have been a man of greater integrity and perhaps done something different. All I'm saying is that that criticism still remains of, do you actually want change, or are you just trying to be as pure as possible?
Yeah.
You know, that's the question.
Great question, by the way. Great comments.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. That was a bad comment. What else we got? You guys like any of these?
I think. Oh, this is we've already talked about this user here, but okay, we could do that one. This one's pretty good. Random and Casual 7494 says, very poor coverage of the subject. Do you even prepare for the shows or decide what to cover and just do a quick search?
All right, so.
I'm kind of retarded.
Yeah, that's right. No, man, I did. I watched a lot of Necrofuntas going into this. I mean, granted, I'm an amateur podcaster doing this on top of regular work and life and family and everything else. But I got through dozens of hours of Nick Fuentes, dozens and dozens, to the point where I actually had a dream about him the night before the podcast.
That's incredible.
Like, I'm so fucking scared right now. You shut up.
Like, I woke up and I was like, "What am I dreaming about Nick Fuentes?"
Do you remember the context?
No, nothing.
We could psychoanalyze the shit out of you right now.
A vague impression of his face, and you know, maybe just him, just like Jew, you know, something like that. My first name is David, so
he could be a Jew, guys. Yeah, guys. That whole Irish and German thing. Don't be fooled.
Yeah. Oh my God, ew, David.
Bennett, I've missed you so much, man.
All right, that's it.
All right, guys, thank you so much for all the comments. Really, really glad that we have seemingly struck a chord here. It's important that we explore all the topics. We're not scared of anything. We don't have an audience big enough or revenue substantial enough to be afraid of losing anything. So fuck it. It's kind of our attitude, right? So if you appreciate that, you know, definitely consider becoming a subscriber. Those are the only funds that really keep this thing going. That and our one amazing sponsor who
help
I'm sure you've just seen an ad for at some point in the last 30 minutes.
So we're going to be diving into our next issue, which is this insane story about Tom Alexandrovich. He was a 38-year-old senior official for the Israeli National Cyber Defense Directorate. He was arrested on August 6th in Las Vegas for luring a child with a computer for a sex act.
Real piece of shit.
Yeah, and if he had just been prosecuted, it'd be like, wow, the Israelis don't run our government.
but instead...
Well, and that's my point. So, like, this is a... and what I think one of the reasons why I paired these two segments is I want to show that, at least for the Groypers who maybe have stuck around for part two of our Fuentes series, that, you know, the contention with these things, I think, needs to go mainstream. But how we contend with it is really important.
Yeah.
So I want to demonstrate. So this guy, he was part of a multi-agency sting operation targeting online child predators involving the Las Vegas Police Department, the FBI, and others. And he was charged with a Class B felony. So he was released on a $10,000 bail on August 7th and returned to Israel on August 8th with no travel restrictions. So
literally one day later.
Yeah. And this is where, if you're wondering where anti-Semitism is coming from, this is the shit that does this, right?
But you don't say that.
Well, I mean, I'm just...
Now he's arguing with the stream deck. I love this.
It's an understandable mistake, right?
I feel like I have no actual words to say, so I'm just talking through this.
It's awesome. It's an understandable mistake, right? I mean, you see an Israeli getting away with something horrendous, right? And the timing could not be worse.
Again.
You said it's an understandable mistake. What is the mistake?
Well, and the mistake of the difference between Israeli versus all Jews, right?
Sure.
Or Jewish power as the architecture of Nick Fuentes, as I understand it, it's that Jewish power is the core problem, right?
Okay, so, but do you think, is there any thread of Jewish power playing a part in this guy getting released when, as we talked about before we started recording, he had a plane ticket booked to Israel before his court date?
We'll get into that. Yeah. So, I mean, like, he's coming from Israel to a cybersecurity conference and then he already had his return flight.
Yeah.
And they let him get on, and that's insane. And we'll dig into it. But as far as, like, you know, what's the connection to that is, I'm not saying that it isn't important that the fact that the guy was Jewish because he's Israeli and that's, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's the way we orientate to what we're talking about when we say Jewish power is, do we mean Dave Smith when we say Jewish power? Because he does. He doesn't say it outright.
Nick does.
But I suspect he does. So in this sense, Dave Smith is just a token, right? He's just a token Jew they bring up, so they are not anti-Semitic when they criticize Israel.
Right.
As opposed to an excellent communicator who has friends in high places and capable of communicating to a large audience, complex ideas. And maybe that's why he was brought on. But it's only the Jewish power phenomena. And once you have that lens in your hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so that's the challenge. And additionally to that, Barry the dentist, or, you know, the architect or whatever, is not also part of the Jewish power structure, although that doesn't mean he doesn't have an ethnic identity. It doesn't mean he's identify with his Jewishness or that his Jewish religion or his Jewish ethnicity. That doesn't mean those things, but that also doesn't imply that he is somehow oppressing you or keeping you down or something like that. And that orientation is part of the challenge.
Yeah.
It's a collectivist error. And it's a sensible one in the sense that collectivism is a natural part of human nature. Our internal and outer, external tribal identifiers are really important to the brain and who humans operate. Specifically, our ability to pattern recognize and see the differences within people. That's normal and natural. But it is Western institutions specifically to disrupt that with external factors to repress that that has given rise to the West, that is giving us the most prosperous, greatest country on earth. That is where our prosperity and cultural dominance come from, is our ability to look past that and see the individual. So it's, yeah, I'm ranting again. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. I think it's important and it needs to be said.
Yeah. So, he was released on $10,000 bail, right? He was given no travel restrictions. So he returned to Israel. Breaking
old
points.
Strategy,
paid off for somebody.
Yeah. Law enforcement, and this is Breaking Points, got the actual court documents, which is interesting, and released them publicly. So I went through them. So the law enforcement, this would be the FBI and local PD, at the time knew that he had a flight coming back to going back to Israel scheduled the next day, right? Bail was requested at 10:58 p.m. on the 6th. No, on the 7th. So arrested on the 6th, night in jail, bail requested at late that night, and then he flies out the next day.
And so some judge just kind of like rubber stamped it.
Yeah, and we don't know. One of the insane things, we don't know who the judge is.
Really?
The court documents don't say.
What, is that normal?
No. No, you think you would know. Maybe it's different in Las Vegas, but from my experience of this, you would know who the judge is that signed off on the warrant. I can't believe I can't find who the judge is that signed off on the warrant.
Weird.
Yeah, right? So the Israeli government initially denied the arrest, later confirmed, and then he is on leave now pending the investigation. The case is now being handled by Clark County DA Stephen B. Wolfson.
Okay.
Elected district attorney since 2012.
I plead the fifth.
Court date pending, but prosecution may be complicated by Alexandrovich's return to Israel. Here's why. One more thing about that. What's interesting is, why is it the Clark County DA handling it, like the state DA, not the federal DA? This is an international incident. You think the federal government would be in charge of that. Well, it's understandable how people might get kind of conspiratorial about that. So first up is that the Segal Chatta, the U.S. attorney for Nevada, was appointed by Trump. She was Israeli born and is letting the local DA do the prosecution. So that's interesting.
Okay.
And this is according to the AF Post. And I'm not endorsing the AF Post. They do quite a bit of misinformation, but I think this was real stated, well summarized here. And then that there was backlash, and I did confirm that her ex account is no longer active after this whole thing. She did. Max Blumenthal did find this.
Okay, wait. Hold on. There's a detail in here that we haven't talked about that interesting. The other seven individuals charged in the same federal child sex sting are being prosecuted by her office.
Yeah,
that
is interesting. Oh, yeah, there's a range of random people. One of them being a pastor, which is interesting. That's the only person I read anything about.
Not terribly surprising, but
a bunch of randoms.
I mean, I'm just saying, pattern recognition here.
The Groypers aren't going to like that, Joe.
Well,
we're trying to recruit them. Okay,
pattern recognition is a thing.
Okay, so this is this lady when she was running for office, and how she framed her candidacy. Might tell you a little bit about her political philosophy.
Okay.
The radical left is burning down our country and attacking Jews in the streets, and Ilhan Omar is fanning the flame. I'm Segal Chatta, an Israeli-born lawyer running to be America's number one conservative attorney general. I'll stand up to Ilhan Omar and take her team to court for defunding our police, opening our borders, and teaching our kids to hate each other based on the color of their skin. I need your help. The left is pouring money into this seat so they can put more criminals on the streets. can you chip in $25 right now? If enough patriots come together, we'll be able to build a grassroots campaign necessary to stop Ilhan Omar in her tracks. It's time that we put strong female lawyers like myself forward to make our case.
That was not a question. Thank you.
She's going to hate it if this message goes viral. Thanks for your support, and God bless America.
Can I clarify one thing? Because the stream deck came in over one important part.
Yeah.
Did she bill herself as an Israeli lawyer? Or did I mishear that?
Israeli born.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, okay, yeah. I just want to make sure because I did not quite hear that.
Okay, so why would she run a political ad against a representative from Minnesota?
Well, she's you know, the rep from Minnesota is quite prominent in the news. It's, you know, punching up. Isn't that good political strategy, David?
Yeah, I mean, she's a U.S. attorney running in Nevada for AG. I'm just confused.
I mean, that's a really great question. I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's an anti-Islamic dog whistle going on here.
Mm,
yeah, okay, maybe. Okay. And then identitarianism going on there, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm. It was like the pro-Israel version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so she decided, nope, not going to do it after Trump appointed her to the office and basically, you know, left it down to the Stephen B. Wolfson.
Tell me more about Stephen B. Wolfson. Do we know anything about him?
He was elected district attorney in 2012. That's it. You want me to do a Wikipedia search here?
Yeah.
You want to look at something specific in his Wikipedia?
No. Just curious about him in generally.
He's a 40-year resident of Las Vegas. Okay. And, yeah, here we go. As Clark County top prosecutor, District Attorney Wolfson. Yeah, serves deputy district attorney for more than 5 years, federal prosecutor for almost 2 years. Yeah.
So what?
Councilman for 8 years. Yeah. Quite the political career. I couldn't find a wiki on her article.
That's all right. I mean, he's not very prominent. I'm just curious what we know about him. Anyway, yeah. All right. So what's going on with
the case?
Here's
the conspiracy theory, yeah, right? And so the U.S. State Department explicitly denied federal intervention to pressure for a state prosecution. Here's why. It's harder for the state to negotiate international extradition, of course. Right, states can get extradition within states. They can collaborate within states quite easy, but good to go overseas, it requires collaboration with the U.S. Department of Justice Office of International Affairs, the OIA, to pursue an extradition. Now, we do have an extradition treaty with Israel. It pretty much says if we have a crime that is for 1 year, at least 1 year punishment, and you have the same crime for at least 1 year, extradition is a thing. Right.
Okay.
Now, extradition doesn't work that it just automatically happens. It is like a negotiation. One of the points of that negotiation is international relations. And will it damage international relations to do this? So if it was at the feds, there would be a much, much greater capability for the federal prosecutor to make the determination to actually pursue this with the OIA. Even if this person might not, because he's an Israeli, hopefully, just trying to be charitable here, hopefully, despite that identity, she would rise above and be like, he tried to screw a kid and we should bring him here and punish him. So if she were to do so, she would have a much more direct and immediate relationship with the OIA to put pressure on, political pressure within Washington, D.C. to do something about it. That's pushing it down to the state makes it much easier to say no and basically be like, well, I'm sorry, due to concerns in this section of code, we've decided not to pursue this negotiation.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you dropped something on here, my boy Bennett.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of this before. Mm-hmm. So this is an article back in 2020 titled "How Jewish American Pedophiles Hide from Justice in Israel." And if you scroll down to widespread problem, yeah. So the Jewish Community Watch, JCW, an American organization that tracks accused pedophiles, has been trying for years to find the individual of this article and help bring him to justice. JCW says Caro and other wanted men and women have been able to exploit the right as the law of return, whereby any Jewish person can move to Israel and automatically gain citizenship. The organization is tracking accused pedophiles since 2014 and says more than 60 people have fled to the U.S. to Israel. Given its limited resources, the JCW says the actual number is likely much larger. So this is not like a one-off thing.
I've heard of this as well. It seems like a theme. Do we have any evidence, and maybe we don't at this moment, but do we have any evidence of other cases like this where there could have been tougher prosecution, but there wasn't, to kind of just leave the door open for this sort of thing to happen?
Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh.
Yeah, so that. For example, Jeffrey Epstein, when he was waiting his trial in 2008, he went to Israel. And according to Daryl Cooper, and as well as Julie K. Brown from the Miami Herald, who did the original reporting on this, he moved a substantial amount of his resources to Israel in order to try to protect them in case things go wrong. This was done, after his non-prosecution agreement, but before entering his guilty plea in June 30th of 2008. So if things went wrong somewhere along the line, he was ready to stay in Israel potentially.
Don't be suspicious.
So, and additionally to that, so some of these are, this is a crazy story, because what you would anticipate is for Israel to fight anti-Semitism would be extraditing as many of these people as possible in order to be a good ally to the United States.
Our number one ally, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, so I think people could tell me that. And I'm just saying that's a bad policy, guys. Don't do that.
It's a bad look.
It's a bad look.
Nothing else. Yeah, it's a bad look.
If you're contending with it, right? And this is the thing that bothers me, is so many people on the right are just not contending with this. They're just avoiding it. Just pretend like it's not a thing.
Why?
They're worried about blowback. They're worried about being called a name, you know? And I get that. I don't want to be called the names. Names suck.
Well, in order to not be called a name, I'm going to read the next sentence. The same thing that is going on in the Catholic Church right now and around the world. So it's not just... this, but
wait, hold on. Is the Vatican allowing like priests and stuff to get out of the United States when they're...
I would need to read the full thing.
I do know,
but I do know that they, around the time that, if anyone's seen the movie Spotlight, about the Boston Globe discovering, hometown, shout out, discovering the crimes of the Catholic Church, the Vatican was very, active in moving priests and covering up why they were moved.
Like relocating them to different parishes or whatever the term is.
Where they continued to abuse kids.
So maybe it's not exclusively an Israeli issue. Seems like there's just networks of sick people
that
do sick things.
Yeah, other people. Do criminals find each other and create cartels? Okay, so... for you new people, one of our mental models is everything is a cartel. All the way down. It's all cartels.
Or a cult.
Top, government, international organizations, UN, all that stuff, cartels.
Everything is gay or CIA.
Yeah.
And that's another one.
Maybe a cartel. And CIA. But that's the thing. Is like there's a ton of... it's a human behavior for self-protection. Great example. Historical nerd example. So are you familiar with the outlaw communities in England?
No.
And across Northern Europe. So one of the things, the practice of English common law, is when you've violated enough rules, everybody basically says you're an outlaw now. Basically the rules, the protection of the law no longer apply to you. Outlaws would get together and basically form little communities, right? Outside of normal society that were functionally lawless and, existed outside of the crown and existed outside of the common law protections. So they would find each other organically as they would run across their individual stories, they would run across others, and they would form these organizations and gangs. Right? That's just something humans do. So, is this a thing? Does it apply to the Catholic Church? Yeah. Is the Catholic Church thing overblown systemically? I don't know. Some people say it is. Maybe it's become too big of a meme. I don't know if it's representative of anything. But once again, don't be a collectivist. Don't assume your average Catholic priest is just a pedophile, because some of them are.
Totally.
Individuals are the ones who act, not groups.
Yes.
All right. So, speaking of someone who should be deported, according to these guys, Sagar, I can never pronounce his last name.
Sagar
Njeti Yeah, I did it. Las Vegas Review confirms that the Israeli...
that guy doesn't count. He can't even read.
Las Vegas Review Journal confirms that the Israeli official Tom Alexander is caught up in Salchek's sex sting, has hired celeb attorneys David Chesnaroff and Richard Schoenfield.
Wow. I don't know that you could have said those anywhere.
Respectfully.
David Chesnaff and Richard Schoenfield.
Okay, well, it's a long ways from me, guys. I can't see that well.
It's okay. It's okay.
I'm getting old. All right.
You're doing good.
But they were appointed by Trump, or Chesnaff was appointed by Trump to the Homeland Security Advisory Council.
I'm reading it? Okay. Just the highlighted section, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Their client, quote, will observe all of his legal obligations and explore all of his legal avenues, end quote, added Chesnaff, who was appointed to the Homeland Security Advisory Council by President Donald Trump.
Right, here's the confirmation of the actual appointment of him being to that council. Now, so that means a guy part of the Homeland Security Advisory Committee is this guy's lawyer.
So he's sort of like an employee of the government, if you will, in some way. Right, yeah. Or affiliated with the government.
Volunteer?
And I would assume. And also representing this guy in court. Is there a conflict of interest there?
Sure, yeah, it seems like... Well,
I'm sure it's pro bono.
Well, do you remember when that guy got fired for pretty much leaking information to... Or no, he didn't get fired. He got appointed to the UN, which is like the same thing in D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got outsourced.
Wasn't that the guy who added the reporter to the signal?
It was Mike Waltz.
Yeah, he was the deputy D&I.
Yes.
Yes.
Was that him, though? Was that the one that added the reporter?
Allegedly added the Atlantic editor-in-chief to the secret group chat about what was going on in
Yemen?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
details.
Very similar. This guy just has this crazy connection, and he's just there, and he happens to be the lawyer. Now, that makes, of course, any pressure on OIA to be harder, therefore putting more on this crazy question from the U.S. attorney to make this decision. Very shockingly connected. Now, what's worse is his lawyers are also donors to the DA.
What? What?
Yeah.
Gasp.
Oh. They make it really hard to make a fair case for this not being a lot of collusion.
Yeah. So Stephen Wilson took $30,000 from these dudes. I can't believe that can be done.
And Chesnaff's legal partner, Richard Schoenfeld, donated another $20,000, while his wife, Diane Chesnaff, donated an additional $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
The following year, Chesnaff represented soccer star Cristiano Ronaldo. Okay, that's
I've heard of him.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Not actually.
So in total, we're talking 60 grand went into this guy's campaign from these people.
And what's crazy, and still... No criminal complaint has been filed against him yet, right? He has a court date for a hearing, but there's no like actual announcement of a prosecution. What is happening, right?
Yeah.
The government suspects him of a Class B felony. All the other seven people out of the eight have all had their filing actually happen. So what's the wait, right? So, and it's not just that, like, I'm obsessed, like, Israel's effect on our government. This is the discourse now, guys. And if government is going to feed into it, it's going to get much worse. Right? So, like,
yeah.
It's so funny to me. The government's like, we are really concerned about the rise of anti-Semitism, and then does this shit, you know?
Yeah. Like, let someone take the fall just to, like, get the heat off you
maybe,
know?
Yeah.
Unless this is the Epstein-like character that Kyle was predicting would come to the forefront on his bingo card this year.
Oh.
Is Tom Alexandrovich the new Jeffrey Epstein?
It's kind of taking up the similar cultural space. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll find out in 10 years that he actually was running as giant sex island.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, this guy just did one thing, but that's how it started with Jeffrey Epstein, too.
I know. That's what I mean.
It was one woman in Florida and then came into like 17 and then actually had a prosecution. So,
yeah.
But I mean, we don't have any evidence of that so far, but it's really taking up the cultural imagination part of it. You got a guy, Israeli, who is trying, it's very clear that the government is intentionally or unintentionally enabled his escape, you know?
Yeah. With like not even crazy. So much as like a show of any attempt to stop it.
Yeah. Lastly, it also isn't clear who paid the bail.
Huh.
I don't know how that came up, and everyone's asking the question. I assume only the person, like, but someone paid the bail. And no one can say who. It wasn't in the court documents that Breaking Point's dropped. So, yeah. Interesting question. Who paid the bail? Did he pay the bail or not? Maybe it just was him. Maybe he
could
just
be.
$10,000.
Yeah. But
big credit card bill, something like that.
I know you said that at the beginning, but what is his role again?
Yeah. So he is a senior official in Israel's National Cyberware Directorate. So think of them as like the NSA for Israel.
Yeah. Seems wow. crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they even let him post bail, though, is kind of a curiosity.
It's insane. So well, so you're
they had no idea he was a flight risk. Despite his book Flight the next day.
Despite him telling him. It's in the court documents.
His bags were literally packed. They handed him back to him and they let him out of jail. Here's your boarding pass, sir.
Yikes.
I mean, the guy showed up with a condom on him.
What?
To what he believed to be was a 15-year-old. You know, and they have him. They have the message logs. Okay. They have it right there. And they freaking Chris Matthews.
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
Thank you, because yeah. I interpreted that differently.
I was fishing it differently.
What? What'd I say?
Like he already put it on. I was like, wait.
Oh, no.
He's ready, son. Yeah, no. Oh, God. Yeah, oh, but that's no. the thing. He's like, you know, you're over. He's this ass, this jackass shows up to this thing, gets arrested and says like, oh, I thought she was 18 and denies it. Right. And then asks for a phone call so that and then. You know, makes an international phone call, says that he was meeting with the NSA and the FBI, says that he was, you know, here for a cybersecurity conference with the government, says he's a government official with the Israeli government, says that he has a booking the next day for a flight on the 8th, 2 days from when he was arrested. And they did the judge not know that? I mean, the judge was contacted late at night. There is cases. There is examples of this where, due to nepotism or something like that, a police officer will make it lighter on, or sorry, a prosecutor will make it lighter on a on somebody by not mentioning key information to a judge. But that's not supposed to be legal. You're supposed to mention all the relevant detail on two things: one, flight risk; two, ability to pay bail. You got to tell him that information, right? So if he's one, can't pay bail, and two, obviously a flight risk. He has a fucking plane ticket. You know? Why? How? It's crazy.
Literally a flight risk. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. Well, they're really not making it easy to steal man this one, are they, David?
Well, yeah. I mean, the question isn't the facts. The question is your interpretation of the facts. Does this mean there's a grand cabal of Jews who run the world? Well, it does mean the Israeli government is very powerful, and our relationship to them is very important for the Donald Trump administration and could be a behind-the-scenes effort to get this guy out scot-free, you know? And of course, people should be outraged by that. Of course, yes. People should be like, the rules that apply to me should apply to you, no matter how elite or whatever government you're from or wherever you are. We're Christian universalists in the West. We think all the rules apply to everybody.
Well, we used
how
to.
How dare you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the American people do. The question is, do our elites, you know? And yeah. If they're not willing to hold their own accountable, then you're going to get more populism. You're going to get more, I think, radical conspiracism. You're going to get more of this of, you know, to the degree that people are just mad about the Jews. And, you know, obviously, and one of the better criticisms is, like, once you do that, you're now kind of distracting from the actual Israel-ness of this, right? Right. And the same thing with the CBS story. It's not the fact that they're Jewish is the problem. It's the fact that Israel is harboring them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a foreign government. Right. And
yeah, I mean, the organization that is trying to track them down is also a bunch of Jewish people.
Yes.
It's just the government that is the issue.
Yes.
Not all Jews.
Right.
Which, like, kind of going what you said about the conspiratorial thing growing is, like, I think that's a lot of why Fuentes has such a big following now, mm-hmm. is because of that rhetoric, and just like they're shooting themselves in the foot constantly with stuff like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for watching, guys. Thank you so much, Joe and Bennett and everything, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And thank you, guys. Please do hit the like button if you like the episode. Drop us a comment. How did we do? How terrible was our commentary? Did we not prepare well enough? Is David actually beta? Let us know in the comments.
Betas!
Come skin a deer with me and tell me.
Yeah, yeah. You're welcome anytime. Drop into our DMs somewhere. Instagram, maybe? I don't know.
You can find me on X.
We'll schedule a Groiper versus David Rand jiu-jitsu tournament. And we'll make it happen. All right. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember, wow, are we going to get canceled tomorrow?
Probably.